Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast, episode 912 of the Real Deal Podcast. We are recording this on a Wednesday morning, early Wednesday morning, burning that midnight oil, to say the least. I'm your host, Real Geo Quinn. We're going to do, of course, a lot of NFL, and we'll get into a couple of things in regards to college football as well. Very interesting weekend in the world in college football, to say the least, and it should be a great weekend coming up. But we begin with our NFL themes for week number 2-0, and we can play defense too. Of course, there are eight teams in the NFL right now that are 2-0. Six of them are in the NFC. Three of them are in the NFC East. So you have that going on, and we'll get to the we can play defense too, as there were two very standout defensive performances for teams that right now in the AFC have Super Bowl aspirations, to say the least. But we begin with the game of the week. Baltimore handles his business 27-24 against Cincinnati. This was a very good game. This was, to me, I look at this game, it was all about Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson was phenomenal in this game. He was spectacular. Now, what you're going to say is, Cyril, what are you talking about? He only had 54 yards rushing, 24-33, 237 yards passing. That's why you have to actually watch the game. He was in total, and the fumble was, listen, that wasn't on him. That was a great play by a defender. By the Cincinnati defense. Cincinnati defense is a very good defense. They're well coached, well coached, fundamentally sound, well organized. They know how to defend against the likes of Lamar Jackson. We've seen what they've done against Patrick Mahomes in the last couple of years. Even though Kansas City was able to get by them in the AFC Championship barely this past season, but I've heard from those who, hate on Lamar Jackson. And it's been the same thing. All he does is run. Can he be a classic pocket quarterback? Can he win games from the pocket? Well, he won this game from the pocket. He only ran for 54 yards, 12 carries, 54 yards. They did an excellent job of holding him, of keeping him in check. But it was just small things you watch. And they were 9-14 on third downs. That was because of Lamar Jackson. Okay. 9-14 on third downs. And he just made little subtle plays from the pocket with his legs that really, was the difference in this game. And again, you just cannot look at the stats. In this particular game, Lamar Jackson, you have to look at just, I'll call it game control, him, his managing of the game, his making the right, the proper reads, his making the key run scramble at a big moment in the game. He had time, it was timely, he made timely plays. And again, most of them were from the pocket. So I love this performance, Lamar Jackson. Again, it will not statistically, it won't probably, it doesn't even rank in his top 100 performances from a statistical standpoint. We've seen Lamar Jackson run for over 150 yards. We've seen him have big time passing games as well. But it's not even about that. It's about, first of all, a divisional opponent on the road. That's number one. They had struggled against Cincinnati the last couple of years in that stadium. And he, frankly, it wasn't even close. He outplayed Joe Burrow by a mile. Like, it really was not close from that standpoint. So, excellent win, excellent on the road divisional win for Baltimore. They're off to a 2-0 start. Their defense has been, great through the first two games. Cincinnati has some issues offensively. They got to find a way to get Jamar Chase going. I mean, he has been bad the first two games. They haven't still. I mean, it's still pretty. Look, Cincinnati falls to 0-2 for the second straight season. I'm not feeling. You don't write a team off after 0-2 with 15 games left. Of course not. But Joe Burrow is still Joe Burrow. But it needs to get healthy though. But they are a team that's going to be teetering. It's going to be a very interesting week three for Cincinnati, because 0-3 is a death knell in the NFL. So I would look for a desperate. I thought it was going to come this game, but I definitely would look for a desperate performance in week three from Cincinnati. But Baltimore keeps on rolling, again with a big divisional win over the Cincinnati Bengals. We're going to deep dive. Before we, because we got plenty of NFL, but we're gonna deep dive right now. Not only one of the biggest stories, not no, the biggest story in college football, it's not even close. One of the biggest stories in all of sports right now, and that is the phenomenon that Deion Sanders has going and at Colorado, where it's become every game has become bigger than a game. It's basically becoming an event. They, were able to get by the in-state rivals, Colorado State. It was a close game, obviously, with the overtime. Colorado State, frankly, outplayed them for most of the game, let's be honest. But again, you give Colorado all the credit in the world. It was a character win, down by 11, second half, fourth quarter. You get a 98-yard drive from Shedeur Sanders, who right now has to be one of the leading candidates for the Heisman Trophy. He's up there. His odds right now are sixth best. Early on, and even bigger than the win is what Deion Sanders is doing to college football. He's changing the game, in essence. And he, like, you know, this game came on at 10 o'clock at night, late Saturday night. It was the fifth most watched ESPN college football game of all time. Think about how long ESPN has been doing college football for at least 40 plus years. The fifth most watched college football game ever. Listen, Deion, and I said this in a podcast earlier, a couple of weeks ago. If you're a head coach in college football, you better be paying attention. If you're an up-and-coming head coach in college football, you better be paying attention to what Deion is doing right now as far as a blueprint for how you even would have a chance to be successful. Now, yeah, you might not have Deion. Of course, you don't have Deion's. You might not have his swag. You might not. Of course, you're not going to have his Hall of Fame career and things of that nature. But there are some things that you can take from Deion Sanders as far as, again, transfer portal, NIL, things of that nature. But here's the thing that's not being talked about enough. And I love, as an educator, I love disruption. Because I think that these systems, whether it politically, sports-wise, need to be really torn down completely. The old way of doing things is done. It's over with. It is. It's over. And Deion is showing you, if you don't get with this new program in the 21st century in 2023, your team's not going to win. Your program's not going to be successful, successful for an extended period of time. And you know, he mentioned something. I have the quote. We have to this quote that he had. He did a piece on 60 Minutes this past week, and he had a quote during the piece, and he says, "My kids play for me. They don't choose a university. They choose me." And that's where college football is at right now. That's where. If you want to have a program with a sustain to have sustained success, these kids coming up don't care about Bear Bryant, the tradition of Alabama. They don't care about Newt Rockne. They have a 99% of them don't even know who the hell Newt Rockne is. They only don't really probably know who Newt Rockne was, okay, or barely Brian Kelly. They don't know Brian Kelly because he's coaching now, but. You get what I'm saying from that standpoint. They don't care about the tradition of these old powerhouse blue blood college football teams. They don't care. They don't. And Deion Sanders he is invested in the players. He's promoting them for Heisman Trophy. He's taking care of the players. You get, like I said, the NIL deals. He's, I mean, he loves his players, and I think what's not talked about with Deion Sanders enough. Everybody gets caught up in the prime time, and back in the day, Jerry Curl and all the stuff Deion did on the field. Deion was as confident and as arrogant of a football player, of an athlete that we've ever seen, but he backed it up. So, like, he's one of the greatest football players of all time, and he was a professional baseball player. Okay, so I think this guy was a played two professional sports. All right, so I think that what's missed about Deion is what people don't talk about a lot, talk about enough. He doesn't. He's a Christian. He doesn't drink. Doesn't smoke. He built his football acumen from the ground up as a coach. Started out with Prime Academy, then Triple A, then Trinity Christian, then Jackson State, and now he's at Colorado. So he's taking. There have been no shortcuts. He's taking. He has. I'm not. He's not perfected, but he is in the process of mastering his craft, of being a craftsman as a coach, mixing it in with the new, with the this new evolution of where sports is at right now in terms of connecting with athletes. You cannot, I don't care, no one cares about your X's and O's if you cannot connect with these young men on a human level, period. And I would say that even in the classroom and education, you got like, no one cares about just. No one cares about you. Your lesson plans don't mean nothing if they, if the person, if the student doesn't trust you. Period. That's that. I mean, I'm in education. I know. So human, like connecting on a human level, Deion has that down cold. And again, it's just not talked about enough about the apprenticeship that he has taken to reach this level. As a head coach, this is not an overnight thing. This was 2012 to 2020. That was 8 years where it's not like Deion did not come into a job right away and be gift wrapped, gift wrapped, a USC or a big time job like that. No, and it wasn't going to happen. That wasn't going to happen at all. So he had to take these steps. And again, it does not get talked about nowhere near enough. We talked, everybody's so focused in on the Deion Sanders, the athlete, that they kind of try to connect that to Deion Sanders, the coach. Deion Sanders, the athlete, is not the same as Deion Sanders, the coach. They're not exactly the same. They're parts. Like, there's still that confidence in the swagger. But Deion Sanders, the coach, is way more humble and down to earth than Deion Sanders, the athlete, ever was. Like Deion Sanders, the coach, is not throwing ice water on the late Tim McCarver. It's just not happening. He's not. That's not who he. And again, that was immature, and it was very immature and unprofessional. Again, and again, he. I mean, he still doesn't take accountability for that. But that's pride. He was dead wrong in that. But I don't. I believe. I think there's a level of humility with Deion now that has caused this success. And it's not just talking the talk, it's actually going out there and walking the walk. You mentioned on the 60 Minutes special, people criticized him for the getting rid of all these Colorado players. He said team won one game last year. Like, wait, if I'm going down, I'm going down with my players. I'm not going down with another coach's players. Like, that's just stupid. And that's hustling backwards. So right now, what's going on in college football? What's going on with Deion Sanders, Colorado, is incredible to say the least. It is there. They are must watch TV every week. They have a brutal 2 game stretch where we're really going to find out where they can go from talk of the country to possible championship, national championship contenders. Are they on that level? Because they have Oregon State. Yeah, excuse me. You have Oregon and USC back to back. I think it would be a hell of a job for them just to split. Think about winning two. I don't think that's gonna. I just don't think that's gonna happen. Both of those teams, LSU, USC, and Oregon are loaded, especially USC. They have Keller Williams, and we know what type of quarterback player he is. They split. That's a hell of an accomplishment. Megan, they are absolutely here to stay. Like, this is, they're going to get. The top, they're going to get great recruits in. The question is, how long will he stay at Colorado before the next, like, big job gets offered to him, because that's coming down the pike. Like somebody, a blue blood school, somebody's going to offer him a just shitload of money to come to their school, a blue blood. That's coming up, because these coaches are not, these jobs, the pressure that's going to be on these coaches is, these seats are getting hotter. Like by every time Colorado wins a game, the athletic directors are saying, "Hey," or the presidents are saying, "Hey, look, what? Hold on, they only won one game, and how long have you been here? And you have this recruiting base versus what their talent? What are we doing here?" So Deion is definitely putting the pressure on these other college co football coaches to win now. But think about what. Just remember what the things that are not talked about enough when in regards to Deion Sanders, outside of the confidence and the flash and all that stuff that we grew up on, in the late 80s, early 90s, with his Florida State and professional football day. All the thoughts, bounce back, nice bounce back win for the Bills. So the Raiders are god awful. We know this. Listen, it's not a coincidence, and we can like go back like to last season before, when we looked at the Bills, especially last season when we started this segment. When the Bills run the football, they are nearly unbeatable. 35 rushes for 183 yards. I think Josh Allen threw the ball 37 times, if that. I don't think he would do it less than that. But when they run the ball, they almost, like I said, they're almost unstoppable. I was never concerned about the defense. Their defense was not the problem last week at all. In my opinion, offensively they were, a shit show with the turnovers. So you clean up the turnovers, you run the ball, and you look like, I mean, you do what you're supposed to do. They like, listen, we can't. We're not going to gauge Buffalo against the Oakland Raiders. It's going to be against, the likes of Kansas City. It's going to be against the likes of the other top dogs in the AFC in particular. Miami is, Miami. So, just a nice win to keep people at bay at least for a week. They had the Commanders this week, so we'll see what happens with that. They should beat the Commanders. They're clearly they're a better team. But listen, Washington's played well so far at 2-0. We'll see what happens. But just kind of one of those wins that kind of stabilizes. Like you come off a loss where your quarterback has four turnovers, and you need a win like this to kind of quiet people enough for a decent take them off your back for a week. The Bill Nation, Bill Mafia can kind of, pick the chin ups and like, all right, we're not good, but the waters are now calmer, sadly. Stock up, stock down. Stock up. Christian McCaffrey, he's been the best offensive player in football so far. He leads the NFL in rushing up into the with 268 yards. He's averaging 6.3 yards a carry, which is just insane. It's not like these are on 10 or 15 carries. He's on 42 carries. Matter of fact, there's concern about his workload. Remember, this guy, and of course, I mean, Kyle Shanahan is a master at utilizing the running game and the scheme. So, again, we knew if he could stay healthy, that he would flourish in his offense, even going back. He was the turning point last season when they made that trade and they took off along with Brock Purdy and how well he played. He's going to be in conversation for Offensive Player of the Year. We know how it's almost impossible for a running back to win MVP. That's just not going to happen. There are too many great quarterbacks in the league. Listen, remember, this guy has been an all pro. He's been a pro bowler. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy. The years he's been healthy, go look at his numbers. Like he every time he's played like 15, 16 games, he's been basically almost 2,000 combined yards or close to it. And he's been one of the most productive backs in the league. Problem is, he always was hurt and couldn't stay on the field. So he's definitely stock up, stock down. Monday night doubleheaders. I can't, like, I'm sorry. I love watching football, but we can't do two games on Monday night. It's just ridiculous. Two average games at best. Again, the NFL is trying to take, they want every single dollar. They, it's not even about the quality of product. They know everybody's watching. They know everybody's going to watch. They know they have the most powerful sports product, in minus soccer in on the planet, and especially out of the four major sports. They already know this, but you know they these double these weak this these weak double headers just like I can't do it. Like as you can, it's just greed. And you know this week you have Carolina Saints. I know you want to sell Bryce Young, but you know he's not ready yet. And then the nightcap, but not nightcap, but the game following during the same time by a chance. And, during the same time, by the way, you have Pittsburgh and Cleveland. Now you saw just one of the great defensive performances of the week with J with T.J. Watt. T.J. Watt was just all over the place, and the stats on his individual numbers in that game don't do his performance justice. He was like a man possessed in that game. Like Deshaun Watson had no chance, and that game was fine, but it. You know, these doubleheaders, I can't, we can't do them, man. They're going to have one coming up this week, unfortunately. But, you know, again, the NFL is trying to, is they're going to, like, the NFL this year, kind of pulling from the NBA's playbook as far as backloading some of the big games. If you look at this week's schedule, week three, there's not a lot of big, there's not a lot of good games. It's another, to me, weak slate of games. They're not like, you know, again, the Jets messed a lot of people up. The Aaron Rodgers thing messed a whole lot. They're going to mess a whole lot of games up because the Jets were, you know, with Aaron Rodgers could have been, like I said, a fringe Super Bowl contender. That hurts. Not just the Jets, but just hurts the NFL product in general, for hurts the NFL from a television standpoint in general. Matter of fact, I would strongly consider if I was the NFL of definitely flexing the Jets out of a couple of those games. They're going to have to. So that hurts. But I just think that the Monday night doubleheader is just a horrible, it's a horrible idea. But you know, the NFL wants, you know, wants every single dollar. So you know what you're going to, you know, what are you going to do from that standpoint? Who won the week? Lamar Jackson. I think to me is not even just. I can't. I could have made a case for some other guys, but not on that level. Like I said, you win a game in the division. We already talked about what he did. Again, just the subtle things, the intangible things that people say that he didn't have as a quarterback from the pocket. Well, he did those things in that particular game, and it was clearly to me, clearly won the week. Before I get the real thoughts, couple of things on couple of games of note, marquee games. Since the Kansas City performance is, it should be scary for the rest of the league. They took out Jacksonville 17-9. Chris Jones returns. Coincidence. They only give up 9 points and completely just dominate the Jacksonville Jaguars. Even though again, it was only 17-9, but you never got the sense that Jacksonville was going to win that game. Again, Cincinnati lost game, the first game. I said, "Who's out? Chris Jones and Kelsey? They're fine." And again, it's scary for the rest of the AFC because we know Patrick Mahomes and that offense is going to score points. I'm not even worried about that. They're going to score. They're going to score points. Their offense will be fine. But if their defense can come close, like if they have a chance to have a legit, probably top 12, top 10 defense, if they're anywhere near that, I don't see how you beat. I don't see how you beat this team with Mahomes. And again, you know how smart they are as an organization. They will pluck a receiver from off another team, that somebody to plug in to help out Mahomes if the offense is sputtering that much. They're gonna find somebody. Speaking of Mahomes, he gets a contract extension, or his contract will be done now, which is gonna make him for the next 4 years the highest paid quarterback ever. Like nobody's gonna get more money than him. In a 4 year span, somewhere like $210 million in the next for the next 4 years. Certainly no surprise. They are playing checkers, playing chess, not checkers. This thing has been planned out for years. When Mahomes signed the 2020 deal, 10 years, $450 million, and he actually could have got more. It was a team friendly deal. All this stuff was in the works. Going back years, this franchise is again is just playing chess. They knew what was coming down the pike with what some of these other quarterbacks were going to get, and they eventually were going to take care of Mahomes. And now, listen, not only does he get his money, but he allows them, he works with them. They're going to be able to create cap space for them to add pieces to the team in future years. So again, they're playing chess. Obviously a no-brainer. He's the best player in the sport. We know that he was going to eventually get his money. And he gets it in, $210 million over 4 years. Jeez. Dallas, New York, another game of note, 30-10. They've outscored Dallas has outscored their opponent 70-10. The defense has been spectacular, but it's not hand out Super Bowl trophy quite yet. They've played Zach Wilson and they've played Daniel Jones. So I'm not gonna lose my mind over the Cowboys. We know that it comes down to, can they beat Philly? Can they beat San Francisco? That's what it comes down to. Can they beat those two teams? That's all. Those are the two teams that they're going to have to beat for anybody to take them serious as Super Bowl contenders. But listen, Michael Parsons has been just a beast. I guess I was talking to the Cowboy fan today. This evening, and he reminds me of Ridgemont High Jefferson when Spicoli, because he wanted to win a bet, destroyed his car, and then he goes out there and basically devours the team single-handedly. So that's how Michael Parsons is playing right now. He's playing out of his mind. Would obviously be the vote was taken defensive player of the year right now. He's destroying people. And listen, Cowboys are doing what they're supposed to do against inferior competition. Like, these are two inferior opponents. They smacked them around. Okay, 2-0. You got 15 games left. So I'm still not getting on the bandwagon of the Cowboys. Still don't trust the Cowboys because they don't trust, in essence, don't trust their quarterback. Washington had a very good win over Denver on the road, 35 to 33. They were down at 1 point, 21-3. They stuck with the running game. The defense turned it up with the pressure. Got to Russell Wilson six times. And Denver right now, and I watched that game. Denver they're just a bad football team. They football all around. They're not. It's gonna be an interesting year with Denver because I don't see this improving. There's not one move they can make that's gonna turn their season around from that standpoint. And you look at this Russell Wilson contract, it's not going to age well. He's due $35 million and $55 million in the years 24 and 25. He's actually only, $22 million, which is manageable, especially for a perceived franchise quarterback. But after that, it gets ugly. And I'm telling you right now, it's not like an NFL, even though there's no guaranteed contracts in the NFL like the NBA. You can't cut him. This is your guy for the next 2 years, and the problem is minimum the next 2 years. And the problem is you paid him this extension. You paid him like a guy who could elevate a franchise. You didn't pay him like a guy to be just okay. This year he's just been okay. So when that extension, not extension, when that money kicks in for real next year, they're gonna be in up Schitt's Creek without a paddle. Like, they have no answers. They like Sean Payton is it's gonna be very interesting to see how Sean Payton navigates this. Because I don't that you can't move Russell Wilson. That try Nobody wants that contract. Nobody should ever even dream of even touching that contract. So if we could trade him, it's not even an option. You're stuck with him. I mean, you're stuck. Like, when you signed him to that extension, you were betting that he would elevate, along with Sean Payton, that he could elevate this team. And that's not been the case. And it's not going to be the case. He's past that point. He's not a bad player, but he's just okay. And again, you're not paying him just okay money. Again, a couple of interesting things before I get the real thoughts. Biggest disappointment had to be the Nick Chubb injury. Is like Nick Chubb has been the probably one of the best running backs in all of football. The best run. He's like right now, he's probably the best running back in all of football. and has been for like the last 3 to 4 years, with the knee injury. And that's why you don't pay running backs. Like, it's just that simple. That's the first thing I thought when he injured his knee. And then, Saquon Barkley gets hurt, but he's only gonna be out for 3 weeks. He'll be back. But Nick Chubb, then, you have people in the internet, well, this is why he was wanting his money. Like, yeah, that's two things can be true. Yeah, you're always at a risk for injury, but there's a reason why you don't give running backs that kind of money. They get hit on every play. Either they're running or blocking. Like, they literally get hit on every single play, offensive play. So you that wear and tear, that wear and tear is too much, can be too much, and you don't. It just I think I don't, and I did not get the public outcry of people just clamoring for running backs to be paid. I just like what are you watching here? This is business, and you have to pay your quarterback an exorbitant amount of money if you have any if you have any quarterback with a chance. If you have a quarterback who's anywhere near being a franchise quarterback, so I never got that discourse of, yeah, running backs are being squeezed out. No, this is actually what they should be making. This is why you don't pay one just a ridiculous amount of money. As far as week three, like I said, the game's not like that for week three. You're talking Denver, Miami. Again, the only reason that has intrigue because Denver, like they, it's one of those seasons on the lines type game against a Miami offense. I mean, Washington put 35 on Denver. What is Miami going to do? And Miami's going to be, the offense is going to be angry because they probably felt like they had an off game against the Patriots, only scoring, 24 points. So that could get ugly fast. And Giants, San Francisco, always from a nostalgic standpoint, these teams won Super Bowls and they played in a few couple NFC championships. So it brings back some memories from that standpoint. But on paper, like San Francisco, that could get ugly fast as well. That Giant offense against San Francisco's defense is a matchup you just don't like, if you're a Giant fan. So again, another ho-hum week three as far as not that drop-dead matchup where you have to be glued to. Of course, NFL, weeks like this, don't get fooled. You're still going to get something that draws you to the game. There's going to be some wild games. There's going to be some comebacks. Like, even Arizona, the Giants was a 21-point comeback. Washington, Denver, 21-point comeback. The Seattle Detroit game was a very good game. So even when you don't get that number one marquee matchup, you still end up getting some good action in a week like this. Real thoughts. Before I let you go, so Nas kind of came out with Magic last week. His sixth and up, sixth and maybe final album with Hit Boy. And I was just thinking about, what does artistry and craftsmanship look like in 2023? And it looks like Nasir Jones, because as long as you, when you have those things as a creator, you can perform forever, in essence. Like, you look at other genres of music, classical, rock, you got these performers that are performing well into their 60s and 70s, in the 60s and 70s. And I think Nas is going to end up falling into that category if he so chooses to. I think there's nothing to me that tells me that Nas won't be rapping at 60 or 65. He, God willing, he lives that long. Like, there's nothing telling me. Like, this guy is a master of his craft. Pure and simple. He's a savant. You never, like, again, you will never see another Nas. You're just not, because there's too much money in rap and hip hop right now for rappers to even have that type of longevity. And let's be honest, also as well, they're not putting in the time to, as from a craft standpoint, because you don't have to. You have SoundCloud, you got YouTube, you got so many other outlets where you can instantly become a star off a hit or TikTok or some or shit like that. There, again, we talked about it earlier with Deion Sanders not taking any shortcuts. Nas, there were no shortcuts from Nas in terms of training himself, reading the books, what have you, having a father, now again, having a father as a musician. So, but there were no shortcuts in terms of getting to where Nas is at right now. It just weren't. He just, I mean, obviously immense talent, but you know, talent isn't everything. It, I mean, you have to begin. You have to be. If you want to get to that level, if you want to, or if you want to stay on for not get to Nas' level, but if you want to be great for an extended period of time, you have to, Matt. You have to. There is an apprenticeship, and you have to master or be attempting to master your craft. That is a lost art in today's society. I hate to sound like the old head on get off my lawn, but it just is. Everybody wants instant gratification. That's why, again, Nas and Dion, similar, very similar as far as having immense talents, immense talent, and mastering their craft, period. Mastering their craft. No missed, no skip steps. Missteps. No skip steps, I should say. Six albums in roughly 3 years, and you have a situation where, again, we this is a one of the most unprecedented runs in by that any artist, any hip hop artist, rap artist has ever had. Point blank, period. No artist, no rap artist, Nas's age in their 40s and 50s have had this type of run. Not even like, well, I mean, not even remotely close. Like, not even, you can't even sniff it. Sniff you can't, no, there's no, not even close to this run. I mean, most guys, you know, that were prominent back in the 80s and early 90s, they're either doing television or just doing producing and things of that, or things of that nature, or just retired from music, or just doing, like, retired from, definitely from rapping, doing behind the scenes stuff, or just collecting checks from some, from their residuals, or, you know, from their masters, you know, that they may own from that standpoint. But they're not rapping. They're not. And I think Nas was trolling y'all a little bit too with the Hit Boy as a producer. Because you remember he had that ridiculous narrative over the course of his year, over the course of his career, that Nas has, you know, bad beats. And I'm like, have you listened? I mean, have you seen some of the producers that he's had over the course of his career? That narrative is hasn't aged well, and it's a ridiculous one to say the least. But six albums in 3 years, and remember the first, you know, King's Disease came out in 2020, and that is, again, the work ethic, the grind, the amount of focus you have to produce at the level he's produced in that short amount of time span is next level. And again, classic Nas album as far as efficiency, 15 tracks, 45 minutes. That's it, 45 minutes. Like, just get right to the point, boom, 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 and here we go. But again, pay attention to the craftsmanship and the artistry. That's why I said Nas is like, it's like a novel, and with any, like listen, you know, I equate Nas to being like The Wire, the rapper. If The Wire was a rapper, it would be Nas. There's no question about it. And listen, you gotta go over a Nas album multiple times because there's so many hidden gems in there. You gotta do it multiple times. One or two listens, of course, is not enough. You gotta, you know, it's a number of things that he drops in that album. So we'll see what happens. What's his next move will be. Probably, I'm guessing, probably will take 2024 off. I mean, it's a lot of work in a short period of time. He has, you know, a number of investments. He is going to enjoy himself. He probably do, you know, he's touring. He's touring with Wu-Tang as we speak. So we'll see what his next move would be. As he records his last album, Magic 3, with Hit-Boy. And who says they'll probably work again? But maybe they'll probably work again. I don't think this is done forever. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of The Real Deal Podcast. This podcast, of course, will be up late, probably late tomorrow, late this evening, early Thursday. Snowfall episode 5 will be coming up this weekend. And, you know, I'm still going to drop The Wire series finale podcast before the month is over to commemorate back to school month, September, you know, back to school month. So we'll drop that. That's not even so much back to school month. That's because of just the positive feedback that, you know, I received from the first Wire Hall of Fame podcast. So we're going to drop the Wire series finale. So before the bump is out. So a lot of great things coming up. Also, maybe some surprise guests as well. We'll see about that. Have a great, great Wednesday. So long.